This year, I've had many reflections, many thoughts, many ideas about the about existence, about the relationships we have within that existence, about love, about connections, and especially about the way in which we integrate our lives within that divine energy which is there all around us, within that wonderful divine energy of Radha and Krishna. And I thought last week, well, not last week, 2 weeks ago, when we did this meditation, some people asked me to put the meditation up on the website because they missed it. But I had to explain that it wasn't a meditation that you could record and place on the website, because it was a group meditation. It was a meditation where all of us came together and connected to each other as a group, interacted as a group, and proceeded forward as a group. Now, for me, this is really the only way I can live. Okay, I like to be alone too, naturally. I like to have a door that I can shut and lock out the outside world. But when it comes to working or accomplishing or doing anything in this world, when it comes to action, I like to be together with others. I like to do it together with others. I don't like to act alone. And when we have these group meditations, it's so nice because we work together as a group. Okay, work is the wrong word. We act together as a group. Or even you could say we enjoy together as a group. We are interacting, we are relating as a entity which is superior to all of us. In other words, we become one of us. And this usness becomes the vehicle within which we operate. And each of us as individuals act within that usness in a way which is very delightful. Now, I've been feeling, I don't really think I've ever felt alone, or not for a long time, because I've always felt I've had the company continuously of either Radha and Krishna, or in some circumstances Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, or other divine beings or devas who I have a very close contact with. And I don't have to worry about saying such a thing. I mean, after all, it's natural to have close contact with these beings. It's not like something you should be even afraid of saying. It's normal. It's abnormal to not have contact. It's normal to have contact. It's not that you must be something to have connection with these wonderful beings, because you already are that. Now, that's very interesting, because sometimes we might end up with this idea that we're not qualified, or we must become qualified, and then we can have connection. But I found that this is not at all the case, and that often this feeling of insufficiency is what prevents us from connecting with these wonderful beings. I think that sometimes these ideas arise because we have this understanding that unless we can do something spectacular, we have no qualification to connect, for example, with Radha and Krishna. That's not really true, and neither is a spectacular capacity even necessarily desirable. But that's another issue. Now, if I think about the way in which my world is arranged, and I know it's not different for others, when I think about the way my world is arranged, I see it as intricately and intimately connected with the divine beings who I embrace, just as one who has intimate relationships with others always feels themselves supported on that foundation. That foundation is the springboard, shall we say, or the field upon which we act. It is the means by which we can express ourselves, be creative, or accomplish anything, or act in any particular way. It's a security. It's a shelter. It's a basis. For me, that basis is my intimate connection with my deities. Now, when I talk about my deities, I'm not specifically referring to those deities who sit in my temple room. Yet while I'm in this house, those deities in that temple room dominate my connection. When I am walking by them, or I'm anywhere in slight consciousness of them, or I walk into their room and sit there or meditate there, or I may chant somewhere, I'm intimately connected with them, for their consciousness is so expansive, and because they are here in my house, because we are here in our house becomes a basis, a foundation upon which activities express or activities are manifested to the external world. Now, that is a very wonderful thing, I think. Yet, if I go to St. Petersburg, for example, and I'm in that absolutely incredible temple with that atmosphere that is indescribable, with that power that is indescribable there, with that consciousness that just expands from there outward to such a degree that I have not understood the limit. Those deities and I, we become that us there when others are involved in programs, that us expands and accommodates all persons. And in that most incredible energy and atmosphere, I find this dominates my consciousness entirely as far as my connection with my deities. I know if I were to go to other places and I was to spend enough time, that I would develop that connection with those particular deities in that place. I would feel similar. But not in every case, because sometimes if I would go to a particular temple and the consciousness of those who are in that temple is a consciousness basically of diversion or a disparate consciousness, which means separation. A consciousness of separation, that there's me and there's the deity, and then there's these other people around here. Then I would have a hard time connecting, because I would have to first get through their consciousness in order to experience or to feel or to connect with the deity. Now, when you speak of deity, it becomes, because of the vocabulary of the word, the You know, it's like in music when you have a vocabulary. Jazz people talk about vocabulary. It's a group of phrases or group of ideas or concepts or means by which you could express different forms of expression according to the mood or the tonality or the chord changes even. It's not that we're speaking about specific, when we speak about vocabulary, specific words with specific definitions. We're talking about a conceptual grouping by which expressions may be made. So when we speak of deity, we might get stuck in the definition of it as those statues, if you will, who represent the divine, who have been called, divine energy has been called to manifest into this personality who we connect to as the supreme. But I'm not referring to deity like that. I have no problem, and I love deities in their forms. They are wonderful. They are those forms. They are this wonderful manifestation. They are. Yet, they are also of a consciousness which is manifesting throughout this entire creation, beyond this entire creation. And there is therefore the possibility to connect to these deities wherever you may be. So we are talking about the Supreme, or even the Devas. This idea of deity really refers to the personality you worship, or the personality to whom you connect, the personality to whom you relate from the innermost core of being of your heart, the personalities to whom you reveal your most deep, intimate thoughts, with whom you may speak on the most intimate levels. Now, considering this definition, when I go to my temple room, and for example, I see Radha and Krishna there, I see two very different personalities, two very unique personalities who are at the same time one personality, yet not so. For me to understand them as one, I have to make some kind of adjustment. I have to make an adjustment, for example, that I have to see them philosophically, even for a moment or even long enough so that I can adjust my vision or adjust my communication, that I'm speaking to them, the two, who are one. Now, that is, I suppose, okay. Naturally, everything's okay in one sense or another. But this idea of putting them together as a one seems to me, anyway, just this is my vision, that somehow or another I'm not really seeing them. I'm not seeing them at all. I'm seeing them as a philosophical conception. And when I do that, and when it happens, I don't like it. It causes me to feel uncomfortable inside. I feel that I have been, at least for a moment, somewhat impersonal, somewhat less than real, somewhat less than, how to put it, spiritual. So I drop that idea. I drop that conceptualization of these personalities. And I look at Radha. I look at Krishna. and I allow them to be separate, unique individuals. I allow my vision to see them in their very unique personalities, which manifest according to the way they are. If you even think of it philosophically for a second, even though Radha and Krishna are one, if you think about what Swarup Damodar Goswami said, they have divided themselves eternally. That means they have defined themselves as two. Now, since they are the ones upon whom all definitions rest, when they define themselves as two, they are two. They may unite in the sense of creating a perfect whole, but that whole is made of these two, uniting, but never merging in that uniting. Although their love will interact, their energies will interact to such a degree that they will become this one beautiful usness of Radha Krishna. But that usness is eternally dependent on their individual energies and love consciousness connecting. The usness is only so powerful as the intention of the two to be connected. Now, maybe that didn't seem to somebody as very important, but to me, I feel that when I see Radha, when I feel Radha, it's very different than when I see Krishna and I feel Krishna. If we for a second just take into consideration that which we have read in literatures which speak about Radha and Krishna. Well, if you think about Radha, Radha is always there in Vrindavan. She doesn't leave Vrindavan. She stays there in Vrindavan. That's her mood. That's her personality. Because she is very much connected with her manifestation of being in that sensual, beautiful forest, that cozy forest, that village of Vrindavan. She stays there. Now Krishna, he leaves Vrindavan. He does things. He goes to other places and is active, interacting with the world, the external world, that world which is outside, that world which is not in Vrindavan, that world which is filled with politics, economic considerations, social interactions, including friction and struggle and conflict. He's involved in war. He's involved in killing. Now, if we think about that for a second, it gives a very interesting perspective on the Supreme or the Divine. It gives an interesting perspective on the way in which we relate to the Supreme, or the way we relate to the Divine, or the way in which we see their energies, or the way we see them manifest. Because I see the energies of the Divine interacting in so many ways all around me. I feel that presence there. It's not that I can look outside and not see that presence. Because just as Krishna went from Vrindavan and interacted intimately with most aspects of society, in one form or another, I see at every moment the interaction of the Supreme in this world. It doesn't matter whether it's now or it was 5,000 whatever years ago, or millions of years ago or millions of years in the future. It is the nature of that Supreme Personality to interact with, to connect with, to be part of intimately this world. And at the same time, I see the same thing in Radha, but I see that their energies interact with this world and with me according to what they are. And when I look at Radha's energy and how she interacts and connects, you see it in the beauty of nature. You see it in the nurturing. You see it in that wonder, which is that feminine energy, which is all-pervading and which we appreciate most. Yet, to think about it in terms of that feminine energy, that masculine energy, is to conceptualize it. Okay, granted, you need words to express naturally. I wouldn't be able to sit here and speak to you if I didn't have the words to do it, if I didn't have the expressive capacities in which come from this wonder that is language, this wonder that is thought, this wonder that is philosophical conception. After all, everything I'm saying is based on something. It takes into consideration so many assumptions. But I feel that my whole life is based in something, and I don't mean it to be an assumption, because I'm assuming something to be true. Quite the contrary. I feel it is so. I don't really care if it's true or not true. I don't even think about it in terms of truth or reality or illusion. I feel it. It's my foundation. It's my basis. It's that upon which I stand. It's that upon which I work. It's that upon which I feel or meditate or my consciousness relates. I feel that foundation. I feel that basis. It's my experience. It's my reality. So when I see and I feel that manifestation, for example, of Radha's energy, I feel it very deeply on that level. I don't see it as a feminine energy. I feel it. Certain things you can see. Sight is not bad. Sight is a very good thing. Seeing something or even understanding it from an intellectual point of view is not bad. After all, order and the capacity to understand rationally is an important element of life. It's not to be neglected. After all, this very broadcast is based almost entirely on rational constructions. To put together this system, to do it, is a rational construction. It took time. It took a lot of contemplation. It took, as you know, a lot of trial and error to make it work. Yet now that it works, we don't think about it as that rational construction anymore. We just feel our way into this communication. We through this hearing and this connection, we feel and experience, or shall we say we experience, and it is this experience that we embrace. Yet it's always connected with this rationality. After all, I'm trying very hard to say one thing after another logically. I'm trying very hard to make a stream of thought that is comprehensible. It's logically built, one sentence on another. It's rational. It's a construction. Yet I'm not trying to express something rational, something logical, something constructed. I'm using this mechanism of thought, rationality, logic, and vocabulary to share a feeling and an experience. And that right there is how at every moment, in every action, especially right now, I feel the presence of Radha and Krishna. Even though I may try to present myself to myself as a feeling experiential person, the reality of it is that all of that is based on this intense web of rationality. I have this problem that I don't really think. I mean, if anybody's been around me for some time, they know I don't sit around all day and think. I don't work by a thought process of thinking. Okay, sure, there are thoughts in there naturally. I'm not a robot or an alien. But maybe I am an alien, but that's another thing. This idea of thinking, it's not like this is the predominating way of being for me. I'm busy experiencing, I'm busy feeling, and my intuitive nature is working most of the time. And when I have to figure out problems, thought very much enters into it. But the thought is a product of the experience when it needs to be so. It is not that the thought dictates the experience. The experience dictates the thought. Of course, I can't say that it's 100% like that all the time. But, I mean, after all, I do get depressed sometimes by thinking about some things. Sometimes people depress me because they're so disappointing. I feel depressed by structures because they're so disappointing. I get frustrated. I'm human. Yet, I see this way in which Radha and Krishna interact. Not necessarily between themselves, but with me as their unique personality and being. And I see as they interact with me this incredible union in that. Whereas this basis of existence, this rational web, this logical structure, or even illogical structure that is still a web, and the experiences, the love, the connection that is there, the being of Radha that is there, that creativity, that intuition, that artistic structure, it all works perfectly together. Even though it is two very specifically unique personalities. So naturally you would see Krishna with his own friends, Radha with her own friends. And you might not even see any connection between Krishna's friends and Radha's friends. Krishna's friends like Krishna. They have the same kind of energy, feeling. The compatibility is there. They vibrate, they resonate in that way. Radha's friends have similar way, but with themselves. So therefore, you would see that relationship develop, these two trees that infiltrate throughout all aspects of existence. That's why whenever you see male and females come together, let's say in any form of relationship, it is in a microcosmic way a reflection of the macrocosm, where we see the feminine, masculine energies mix, yet are always separate. But then there's these other deities or deity on the altar whose energy it makes it even more amazing. Lord Chaitanya. We have this connection of male and female in the same personality. This union of Radha and Krishna in one personality. Very mysterious. You know, let's talk a little bit about the last days of Lord Chaitanya's life. That was a lot of years. He simply was disassociated from the world around him, not able to function in this world, simply absorbed in this non-stop turmoil that is the relationship of the give and take, of the push and shove, of the connection and separation of the love of Radha and Krishna. These mountains, these planets, these universes, these all existences that they are, in this union, in this separation, in this clash, in this dance of their connection, this embrace and this separation, and the longing to again embrace, and the impossibility of doing it for long because of the intensity, this lack of capacity to continue it forever due to the turmoil that is intrinsic in their nature, that defines their very relationship. So within Lord Chaitanya in his final days, from the external point of view, he was totally insane. Who rubs his face up against walls so that it's bleeding, crying out and lamenting, and or who all of a sudden runs into the ocean and just floats around with huge body and limbs, everything extended, and it's madness. And that madness, just think about it, that madness is that union. You know, when Radha and Krishna are not one, it's a lot easier for them. When they have an argument, they go away. Radha laments with her friends. Krishna laments with his friends. It's not insanity. Okay, sometimes Radha goes a little bit insane, like when she talks with bumblebees. Still, that's within reason. That makes sense to us. But when Lord Chaitanya goes insane like that, we don't really relate to it. You can read the book all you like. But even those who were standing next to him while this was happening, they were going crazy. They were losing their minds. All of a sudden, he would disappear. It would be just completely madness. They wanted to lock him up in a room, but he would still get out. They locked the doors, they locked the windows, they locked everything. He would still get out, naturally. They were all night long walking everywhere, trying to find, where did Gauranga go? Now just think about that. Lord Chaitanya is really a mystery. Not only that, how do you relate to Lord Chaitanya? You can relate. You can relate to Krishna. I mean, people do that like as gopis or whatever. You can relate to Radha similarly as gopis or whatever. Or coward boys, whatever, with Krishna. So you can relate with them. They make sense. It's possible to do it. Especially when Krishna's off in Mathura Dwarka, especially Dwarka. You can relate on all kinds of levels. It's possible to do it. Not one person related to Lord Chaitanya. Okay, when he was in the mad state, Swarup Damodar maybe, Ramananda Roy, but they weren't really relating with, they were feeding his ecstasies, feeding his feelings. They had to completely transform their energies, consciousness, to 100% dedication to Lord Chaitanya. There wasn't really a give and a take in the same way there was, like, say, for with Krishna when he's playing with the coward boys, or Radha's carrying yogurt with the gopis. I'm not sure if this point is really clear, but it's as if Lord Chaitanya is this personality to whom everything becomes dissolved in this insanity of love. And the problem with that is that things don't function. The world doesn't go on. There's not this rational structure of the whole thing. In fact, he won't even see a king, even though the king's his great devotee. He won't hear the word king or management or organization or money. It's totally impractical for the arrangement of this existence that we know it, as we know it. Radha and Krishna are much more practical. One might say Lord Chaitanya is basically only for madmen. Okay, somebody would say, yeah, oh, wait a minute, but, you know, we can chant. And he brought this chanting thing, and we can develop with the chanting and everything. Yeah, sure, you can do that. But where are you headed with that? Are you headed to make that intimate connection with Lord Chaitanya? And what was interesting is he wasn't really interested in that. He wanted you to connect with Radha and Krishna. So it's like you get drawn into this black hole, so to speak, white hole in this case, pure white hole. But just before you get there, you're sent off to Radha and Krishna. Because nobody can enter into that which is Lord Chaitanya. Only he. No one else. No one else can experience it. No one else can connect to it in that way. That's really incredible. So, when I see Lord Chaitanya, especially in St. Petersburg, because he's so big, so amazing, I remember when we installed Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, it was nearly one of the worst days I could ever imagine. I had gotten some horrible news just before I walked out on that altar. Earth-shattering, horrible news. I was shaking all over the place and had to just simply throw it all away and concentrate on installing those deities. And then my mind was split in all kinds of directions. Like, here we are bringing Lord Chaitanya here, and then at the same time there's all this madness out there all around, and how to balance that in madness and insanity with this wonder that is Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and they're so big and so powerful. So when I go before Lord Chaitanya, I can't really, there's like nothing to say and nothing to do, and simply accept. Not anything to ask for, nothing to request. You simply accept and feel that acceptance and try to work with that unbelievable energy that I really don't think very many people have much of a clue about. So admittedly, when I have Radha and Krishna, I my consciousness moves towards them. And of the two, my consciousness moves mainly towards Radha. And Lord Chaitanya is somebody who I say, yes, it's very complex. He's very complex to me. He stands there as if he was one of the deities on the altar. But is it really so? No, I'm not saying one way or another, and I'm not making a judgment here. I'm just trying to share with you that way in which I look at Lord Chaitanya. It's like, because I don't talk about Lord Chaitanya all that much. It's because when I see him, he's very complex. He's very difficult to grasp. And I don't want to say, okay, you know, he chanted Hare Krishna and he did all these kirtans and then he went here and there. Or even get involved in all this philosophical discussion about nitpicking about this point and that point. It bores me. It doesn't inspire me. I mean, it's okay. You read the Chaitanya Charitamrita or something like that. It's fine. But that's not what I like to do nowadays. I like to experience the deity. And I must admit, experiencing Lord Chaitanya is very complex because all I can do is accept. The two-way reciprocation is rather difficult. Like, I accept and I offer you my life, or maybe that's not even what he wants. I feel it very easy to do that with Radha and Krishna. Or again, especially with Radha. But with Lord Chaitanya, it's like, I'm not sure. Now, I know philosophically I can quote the same quotes that most people can quote, but I don't feel so confident. Maybe because I'm somehow, whatever, not got it together or whatever, but I'm not so confident. I look and I'm just in awe of this. The energy just overwhelms me entirely. I don't know how to relate. So I stop trying. I just accept it. Just accept it. Like when we in St. Petersburg all stand before the deities and just accept their energy and just allow their energy to flow over us and just embrace that energy. That's because Lord Chaitanya is the dominating personality there. We just feel that Lord Nityananda is totally devoted to Lord Chaitanya and Radha Krishna are one with Lord Chaitanya. But even though Ramananda Roy may have seen Radha, who saw Radha and Krishna and Lord become one in Lord Chaitanya and again Radha and Krishna, for him the predominating personality was Lord Chaitanya. Even all the demigods came to visit Lord Chaitanya. So when we just stand there and we accept, we're accepting that incredible energy, we're accepting that incredible love, we're accepting that consciousness. Yet acting on that consciousness manifests much better in relationship with Radha and Krishna or with the devas or with other people or in this world, interacting in a way in which we can share our rational selves with our feeling selves. We can experience as a whole personality who makes choices and acts and contemplates and feels and reflects and expresses. So I suppose this discussion today is a very meager, I really use this word rarely, but it's a meager attempt on my part to dip my toe into the ocean that is these wonderful personalities who formulate the basis of life. And I have no motive in doing this because for the life of me, I couldn't even figure out why I just said what I said. But it's something that is so important to me, so incredibly important to me. It's the very basis of existence, without which I am nothing. That I know. Cannot live without my deities. Cannot exist without feeling them. Would feel hysterical if I were to think I'm actually alone. There's no synchronicity to organize things, to make connections, to make these events take place which give me some enthusiasm in life. So I say thank you to those. I say thank you, Radha and Krishna. I say thank you, Lord Chaitanya. I say thank you, all you beautiful devas. I say thank you, all you wonderful people. Thank you, because all of this energy is so supportive. And it just feels so good to be supported in this way.